Blog Talk Radio.
Keep it.
and it's been well documented, guys, as you know, in this industry and dealing with athletes and all of that in the media, how black athletes are stereotyped negatively in the media compared to white athletes. I was reading an article, and I want to read a little bit of it and then get some thoughts from you if my screen ever pops back up on for me. But the article did speak about the media bias. This research was done as television and video games and how they affect views and thoughts and actions. This research was done by Cynthia Frisbee. She's an associate professor of strategic communication at the University of Missouri School of Journalism. She revealed something we already know, the stereotyping in the way media portrays athletes. Frisbee found that media stories of African-American athletes focus primarily on criminal actions, while stories about white athletes are all overwhelmingly positive. She said she examined 155 news articles about male athletes from online and print news sources to determine the theme of each story. The themes identified as crime, domestic violence, training, hard work, moral success or failure, violating rules of the sports league, accomplishments, and personal lifestyle. She found that overall, more stories were written about white athletes, 43%, than black, 39%. She found that 66% of the crime stories involved black athletes, while only 22% their white counterparts. More than 70% of domestic violence stories involve black athletes, and only 17% white. 53% stories involving black athletes had a negative tone, while only 27% for whites. And we can go on and on with these statistics. And, you know, people like to throw statistics. We see statistics out there not only in sports. You know, baseball has is largely known for that, but we see it in politics and everything else. My question, which you guys already know the answer, but Pat Nation needs to hear it, is how dangerous, I'll start with you, T, how dangerous are those type of numbers when you talk about those stories? Because you can't tell me that, going back to this, you can't tell me that 70% of the domestic violence stories that involve black athletes and only 17% are white, that the numbers weigh that out in terms of domestic violence actions. In other words, in the NFL, you can't tell me 7 out of 10 domestic violence issues are with African Americans. And so when she brings this stuff out, these guys, the power with the pen, and we talked about this, T, especially with baseball writers, they are notoriously bullish, racist, and hold grudges. And they are stereotypical. But when you see this,
no,
and writing
no,
yourself,
you can't make me believe that. No,
and as a writer and you know of that, it's really damaging, and it really skews a opinion of people, especially those who are Joe White guy or soccer mom white lady in the suburbs who have no experience with black people in the first place.
Well, you know, no disrespect to the doctor. I could have saved her a couple of bucks and to let her know about that, you know, not to make this too long. You know, one of the reasons why we came up with BASN Newsroom was, you know, BASN stands for Black Athlete Sports Network. That was our previous name before we made the transition last year and relaunched the site. Our late CEO, Roland Rogers, basically came up with BASN because he wanted to celebrate the past, present, and future of the most imitated and most innovative being in all of professional in all of the sports world, and that is the black athlete, whether it be basketball or golf, whether it be football or tennis or what have you. That being said, all you got to do is just look at your basic history from Jack Johnson to O.J. to T.O. to Muhammad Ali. You know, it has always been that way for the black athlete. You have to remember, and especially now, the majority of your newsrooms, of your quote-unquote mainstream newsrooms, don't have black editors. The black press as a whole is an embarrassment now, as opposed to what it was when we were growing up. You know, they've gone, you know, somewhere along the line, the black press dropped the ball in regards to talking about that racial chasm that's been going on for years. And, you know, it's funny because, yes, baseball does, you know, we probably think of it more with baseball, but trust, all the sports have their moments. I think we've seen that. Oh, I think we've seen that over the years, whether you're talking about the Kaepernick thing from this past year, when you're talking about how someone can write a book about LeBron James and call him, pardon my French, the whore of Akron, and be able to basically, you know, make a living off of, you know, making an example of LeBron. But this has been going on for years. And one of the things that we've always tried to do at BASN is to balance the scales. We don't, you know, because, see, a lot of what's going on is the misrepresentation, you know, and a lot of it has to do with history. One of the things that I've been the most proud of over the years is we you know, I did a lot of stuff on Negro League baseball. I've been lucky enough to interview about a little over a dozen Negro Leaguers over the years. We've also done a thing where we do something called Focus on History, and we talk about folks like the first, you know, one of the first blacks to play rugby in England, a woman by the name of I can't think, I'm forgetting the name now, but, you know, there were black skaters before Debbie Thomas. There were great tennis players even before the Williams sisters. There were great black golfers long before even Lee Elder and Tiger Woods. There were, you know, we all know the contributions of what the Negro Leagues did to baseball as a whole. You have to remember, Major League, you know, Negro League, the Negro Leagues played night ball long before the Major Leagues did. There was Barnes, you know, basically Negro Leagues, you know, invented barnstorming in a sense. But I say all that to basically say, when you have a media that already, you know, has their own idea of what they think a black man is and what a black man isn't, that's when you're going to get that. And this has been a long-standing tradition, whether it be sports media, whether it be entertainment media, you know, politics, all of that. Sports comes up more to a head now because of that 24/7, 365 feeding frenzy that comes on. I've always felt like the O.J. trial, the killing of his wife, was sort of the Rosetta Stone of the reporting on black athletes. It always, you know, now granted, there was prejudice and racial stuff before then, but for many folks of this generation, the O.J. Simpson trial was sort of the starting point of how things change and how athletes, whether they be active athletes or non-active athletes, black, you know, black as well, are reported on. We all know how OJ was depicted before the trial. And, you know, now, I mean, you know, again, I'm going to cut off right here. I did a thing last winter called O.J. Simpson versus Jim Brown. What we basically did was during the first 14 weeks of the season, we took a look at O.J.'s 1973 season where he ran for 2,000 yards, and we looked at Jim Brown's season where he set then the NFL record for 1,863 yards. And it was just about football. My thing was, and I stated it from day one, if you're coming here to hear scandal on Jim Brown or O.J., might as well leave now, because this is about comparing the two and their seasons. And I did that more so because so much of, yes, no one's, you know, whether you think he killed his wife or didn't kill his wife, that's immaterial. But the fact that O.J.'s career has all but been thrown away and never to be spoke upon again, to me, that's silly. Because O.J. was one of the most innovative athletes of all time.
Right. I want to get Orlando's thoughts already. I see you on the line. Tony said a mouthful. One of the things he mentioned about, you know, we were, you know, tennis stars and ice skaters and golf talents, you know, back in the day. But just like when we were prosperous on Black Wall Street or prosperous as Black Republicans after Reconstruction, all of that was taken away through Jim Crow and everything else, laws and oppression and every the fear factors and all the things that they do in this country to keep us from being prosperous. You said last night on this show, you know, we haven't even seen a second generation of billionaires in this country. You know, Jordan hadn't even given his money over to his kids yet, you know, that kind of thing. But one of the things that I think as a reporter, and I think Tony says it, we say it all the time, and I do apologize to those who were listening to the previous show that may take offense to this, but, you know, a lot of these mainstream white media journalists have penis envy. They want to be like us. They want to be like the athlete. They want to be like the scientist that we are, the Michael Jackson or whatever the case, the Bill Cosby, whoever. They want to be like us. And so the mentality of supremacy, of this thought that they own everything, and they should own everything, and they should be at the top of everything, and they should run everything, comes into their writing, comes into not just the mindset of a Jim Rice or the mindset of a Barry Bonds, but the physicality part of it. So when they write, all of that comes out, the hate, the envy, the jealousy, all of that, Orlando, in my opinion, comes out. And I think that's part of the problem is that, you know, we can be, as you hear Tony, we can be as journalists and on-air personalities and all of that as it relates to media, we can be very neutral. We can be fair. They can't. A lot of them can't. I'm not saying all, but a lot of them can't because they're bringing all the personal historical supremacy that they've learned or just developed into covering the black athlete or, as Tony said, the black entertainer or the black politician and go on and on.
You said a mouthful. So one thing I refer to quickly, Bill Roden's book, and I don't know why the titles are getting past me by, but what did he call it?
$40 million slaves.
$40 million slaves. There you go. Thank you. So prevalent. The book holds weight. And Tony was right. Since the beginning of time, at least the time in the United States, and let's just focus on that. We have been chasing and participating, not yet, but yet, participating in a game that they tell us to find 21. We've had 21 about 5 million times. The card game is now 300. It's a new card game. And when we get to 299, it's now 400, if you know what I'm saying. So what they show us is that we cannot be successful. And this is the image that's portrayed. And you're right, there is penis envy, no doubt about it. But we cannot be successful in anything other than entertainment and sports. They don't show us how we're kicking behind in sciences, how we're kicking behind in liberal arts, how we're destroying people in this thing. So from the media perspective, the media is not for us. It never was for us. And that's the illusion. We believed it was for us. We believed that we can get in here, we can make a difference. And to a degree, some people are making a difference. But overall, the media has not been for us. It's not our friend. You can't get in there, and there's plenty of us that we know that entered into this profession, that wanted to enter in this profession so they can try to balance out the scales. But to their dismay and shock, they haven't been able to tell their story. They still have to read a teleprompter. They still have to read a script or fight with that producer to get a story across. But the stories aren't for us. And OJ was the mark. Like, everything that this generation of kids and people see is a direct result of OJ. And it wasn't just the fact that OJ won that case. It was the fact that he won that case with Johnny Cochran. It wasn't Robert Shapiro that was the hero of that case as far as an attorney, but Johnny Cochran came in there. So they were so
upset. That made
it
even worse.
upset at this black man. And you know the thing about it is that, and you're right, and Tony, you're right with that. O.J. was one of the most gifted football players to have ever graced the field. We hear about Gale Sayers and everything and how sweet Gale was. Gale didn't have the career that O.J. had. Emmitt Smith didn't have the career that O.J. had. So, they've erased this man's legacy that he did not do anything. And before that, he was in all types of movies and commercials. Like, for our generation, we know all about this dude. I mean, hell, you can't run through an airport now, but back in the day, you ran through an airport trying to jump over. Yeah. You tried to jump over some seats there, thinking you were OJ. You know? So, and the thing about that dude, he was ignorant to the fact that he thought that America would accept him. That he,
and that's
he,
the
he
problem.
Made things
that's
better.
The problem, guys. With all due respect, I totally get on the field. I got that in terms of what he did and how flawless he was in his style of running and the numbers he created, and he set the tone for those Emmitt Smiths and all these other guys that came, Barry Sanders and those guys. But OJ really, really had an opportunity to seal the deal. As you mentioned, they were already upset because this black man got away with a murder and a black man got him off. And then he comes back and does idiotic stuff, not once, not twice, but three times. And he just continues to just and remember, it was sisters that got him off in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And I just OJ is a bad example for me.
I'll show you, Elliot. I can give you an example of the racism and how OJ. Go back to piggyback on what you said in regard to the makeup of the jury. You remember when the makeup of the jury came out, as you all remember, it was mainly black women, and the whole deal was well, you know, this is going to hurt them because white women are going to, I mean, black women are going to be upset with him because he was married to a white woman.
Mm-hmm.
No more than 5 minutes after that not guilty verdict came out, they couldn't stop, you know, they all but said, them black, you know, bees got him off. So
yeah.
Therein lies, because see, again, I have always said, if that was O.J.'s first wife, Marguerite,
yeah,
it would have never been the trial of the century. Oh, it would have gotten
right.
publicity. But because he dared to kill a blonde-haired, blue-eyed white woman, and we all know from whether you're talking, you know, whether you're talking the original Birth of a Nation, or now, that's still prevalent. That's, you know, that whole saving the sanctity of the white woman, that has always been that's the one thing that's been prevailing. And when a black man, especially a black athlete's involved, the ante goes up even higher because, you know, because again, they have always looked at us as black men to be subservience. No matter what, you can be. No matter what, it doesn't matter whether you're a president, whether you're an athlete, whether you're or what have you. They always
yeah.
look at us as subservience.
And I guess, you know, OJ to me, in a weird sense, is that guy. And I'm gonna bring Reggie in, and you can go after this, Reggie. That black person. Let's say, but we're talking about, let's say, black men in particular that are black in skin only. Ben Carson, O.J. Simpson, I don't see a difference. O.J. said, remember, we said this last night, and Tony, you know what he said. He said he, when they were going through what they were going through in the late 60s with Kareem and Bill Russell and Jim, and he said, I'm a football player, I ain't black. That's almost like Tiger Woods saying, I'm not black. I'm Japanese or whatever the hell he said he was. You know,
mm-hmm,
I mean,
mm-hmm.
they are ashamed of their skin. Ben Carson is ashamed of his skin. I think he's an elitist. I think that's part of it. But I think these humble upbringing and with some people, they come up and develop and they lose their way. Like they, I don't want to be the gifted hands person anymore. My mother's going through and I'm being called this and I'm poor. I don't want to deal with that anymore. But that's where you came from. And I think that's the problem with these guys who are black in skin only. Reggie Howell.
Gentlemen, good evening. But I think
good evening.
All the deacons for defense of justice have made an excellent point. But the point that bothers me is that Israeli sniper that was on the border and took out a media person. And to me, that is the straw that broke the camel's back. The Israelis have, in my opinion, not been called out on the carpet for this dastardly act that they did to that media person. And that could be me, you, anybody else. In our line of work, speaking on the media, and this could have happened. And again, these are the same people in the media that would go out of their way and cover for the Israelis. But when the Pakistanians, who by the way are people of African descent,
mm-hmm.
will use any means necessary to try to protect themselves, this government will go out of their way to make sure that they will protect them with our tax dollars. And isn't it interesting, in my humble opinion, that if Africa had the same foreign policy as Israel, I think Africa would be a great nation. Gentlemen, can you help a brother out?
Orlando. Did we lose Orlando? Tony, you take it.
Well, it's, you know, I'm not, you know, again, it speaks to the double. It speaks to the racial double standard that has existed for years. And again, it's whether it's sports, politics, entertainment, or what have you.
you know, one of the main, and you know, like Reggie said, Palestinians are of of African descent, so they're automatically going to be, you know, lumped into that whole where there's something wrong with them. But see, again, it plays into the whole narrative. You know, it plays into the whole narrative. And again, who are telling these stories, or in this case, mistelling these stories? That I think that's the thing that's the biggest crime, is that the very same stereotypes that made Birth of a Nation, and again, the D.W. Griffith Birth of a Nation, a quote-unquote classic, are
which
the
people
same thing.
I think should see so they can get not get angry, but see what this country, the origin of all of this took place. But go ahead, T.
Sure. But well, see, it's just a reminder to us, because see, that's a burden that we have had to live with as Black people for years. What bothers me is, like I've said several times on this show and other shows, you know, we're fighting the same fight of our ancestors, and it's 2018. The fact that we are still fighting, it speaks to the society. Now, a lot of it also speaks maybe to us to a certain extent, but I think also when you realize that anything and everything that we've, you know, they have spent a lifetime trying to discredit anything and everything that we've done.
Right.
You know, LA, Preach. When you have a 400-year head freaking start, a 400 freaking year head start, then all of a sudden the playing field is not even level, but somewhat half as equal. Then you got the nerve to say, well, I'm white and I'm being discriminated against. I'm so upset. I'm tired of reverse discrimination. Bullshit. I mean, this is the BS that goes on. But Europeans talking about they being discriminated against, and they had a 400-year head start? Give me a
right.
freaking
and break. And, Reggie, they changed, as I think Tony and Orlando alluded to, they changed the starting line and the finish line. They just, we go from 21 blackjack to, as Orlando said, 300. They keep changing it as they go along. So we catch up, we surpass them, and then they change. Remember, people don't realize this, and do your research. This is why we all talk about this. Do your research. The NRA, back in the day, was very sort of, you know, moderate. Right, it wasn't this big gun lobbyist type thing until Black Panthers were telling people to get guns and stuff, and then here comes Richard Nixon and Law and Order, and beat the hell out of people and take the guns away, and then
don't forget Ronald Reagan as well.
That's right, those policies changed then.
Yeah.
The big black bully, the boogeyman is coming to get you to rape your wife and kill you and kill your son, your baby, you know. So then those gun policies change all of a sudden. Now they, you know, the Second Amendment now. Now it's all about the Second Amendment. You know, you're not going to take away my guns and all this other stuff. So, it's all about us. They're so concerned with us. And this is people, if guys, you can follow up with this, but people, all they need to do is look at South Africa and apartheid. That little minority held on to that big majority of people, and they were so afraid to let it go because they were so afraid of what those black folks were going to do to them. Because they oppressed and beat and killed and murdered and slaughtered them for so many centuries and for so long. They didn't want to give up anything. Well, welcome to the United States. Welcome to the United States, you know.
Yeah. And And see, one of the, you know, one of the biggest lies that has been perpetuated over the years, and I think I can, you know, I think I can speak for everyone on the line here when I say that, you know, as even as much as we've gone through over the years, we don't seek retaliation. We just want to be left the hell alone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I got an email from someone who said that the media is biased both ways. They said, just check MSNBC and CNN. So apparently this person is probably a Fox News conservative person.
Well, once they allow themselves to uninsert their head from their behind, they'll realize just how foolish what they're saying.
Yeah. It's, first of all, what Tony said, what Reddy said, what you said, what I've said, doesn't have a damn thing to do about politics. We don't care about politics. I don't care about you Republicans. I don't care about you stupid-ass Democrats. We're not talking about this. We're talking about the media telling a story that is
right.
That is not skewed against people and not people of color, because I'm being selfish here. People of color, you got to get the hell away from us. We're talking about black people, relatives
right.
and descendants of those hostages, prisoners of war, who was brought to this country. And the story has not been told, and has not been told equally nor fairly, and it's not because there are a lack of blacks in media. There are tons of blacks in media. You know, I hold two media degrees. You know, there are tons of blacks in media, but we still aren't able to tell our story. And so CNBC, whether you say Fox or all of that, who gives a damn? And for the emailer, and this has pissed me off, like got me going real quick, but it's you look at who owns CNBC, you look at who owns Fox, all of these guys are the same white people that sit in the same damn country club and right across the table from each other. That's like Reggie, L.A., Tony, and myself. We got four different types of broadcast and that completely speaks and fights with each other, but all four of us are sitting in a goddamn club getting our goddamn nails done, having a cigar, drinking some scotch.
And if they want to say that the CNN, I've said on this program before, you know, we've seen in the past these conversations on race. What color was the narrator? Let's take a wild guess. I mean, they're telling the story even in that regard. So I don't understand the premise of the question. I don't even understand or the comment of that anyway, because, I might have respect for Anderson Cooper, but Anderson Cooper doesn't know what it means to be black, so he shouldn't be leading any conversation about being black in America.
And even when they tried to put, I guess it was a Soledad O'Brien do it as well. Look, Soledad and Don Lemon, they're there, you know, they're there to make, you know, the liberals feel better about themselves. Because see, what this emailer, he or she did, it's a longstanding tradition. When it starts to get real, let's change the subject. Now, like Orlando said, no one gives a damn about the politics of this. The politics is immaterial. It's a factor, but in the big picture, it's immaterial. But see, that's the thing.
Roland Martin got kicked off the air because he was bringing too much heat. I mean, people might say Roland didn't do enough. That's always the case. Anytime you have an outspoken black person, get that Negro off the air. Tavis Smiley, even Dr. Cornell West. But then again, it's kind of quiet. That Tavis Smiley and Cornell West are kind of quiet since Trump's been in office. I'm kind of wondering about that.
But it's just, but see, again, there is always somebody that's just going to say, yeah, but. But you know what? No buts. Our generation has died because of buts. You know, we have men that are falsely incarcerated because of butt. So, you know, basically, you know, get that whole butt out of here, in a sense. But see, again, the reaction is always going to be predictable. They're going to, you know, try to skewer it so that, you know, it's, oh, it's not a race problem, it's not a race problem. But see, you don't even want to talk about it on a smaller level. And see, also, what happens so many times, like you said, what makes a lot of white people uncomfortable is that in regards to racism, they can't control the narrative on it.
Well, they want to.
therein lies the point. They always want to control the narrative, even when they have nothing at stake in it. They want to control the narrative, and the fact that they can't control the narrative on race relations is the reasons why you get responses like this, because he or she can't control the narrative. So, well, let's talk about something else. No one wants to talk about that right now. Well, damn it, we are going to talk about it now. And we've had to talk about it now because you refuse to talk about it.
I'm going to take a 60-second-ish break and come back. I want to talk baseball. But I got an interesting email, and I want to get you guys' thoughts before we switch to baseball. Stay tuned.
Recovery Month has become widely recognized and does an outstanding job of celebrating recovery, increasing awareness, and acknowledging the amazing work of providers, advocates, people in recovery, and their families. I believe our work together is helping many Americans better understand, seek out, attain, and sustain recovery. What began as a small and very good idea has grown into a national, mainstream, sustained, and systematic public education and support effort, all focused on the message that people recover. Getting the message of recovery right is critical because people take action based on what they hear and see, and most importantly, what they experience. Experience shapes our knowledge, our values, our attitudes, our beliefs, and our action. Of those who recognized their need for treatment but didn't receive care, the number one reason was no health coverage and could not afford the cost. No one in need should be denied the opportunity for treatment and recovery in our country.
If you've got a clogged up nose, Simply Stuffy. If you've got a snuffly nose, Simply Stuffy. If the rest of you feel fine, but your nose is out of line, give your schnozzle what it needs, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy, from the makers of Children's Tylenol. It has only the medicine your child needs to make a stuffy nose simply disappear.
If you want to smell a rose, get the stuff out of your nose. If you take a serious smile, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy. Use as directed.
Would you like to know where your family came from? Are you planning a reunion? Is your business celebrating an anniversary? Valerie Metzler, archivist historian, can help. With 34 years of experience as an archivist, preserving and making accessible documents and photographs, and as a historian researching genealogies, Valerie Metzler, archivist historian, can bring your history to life and preserve it for your children's grandchildren. For more information, email her, VM as in Mary, AH, at Key. keycon.net. That's V, M as in Mary, A-H at keyconn.net. Or call 814-932-1740.
Welcome back to the pad. Don't forget, if you miss any part of the program, you can go to our website, thebachelorpadnetwork.com, thebachelorpadnetwork.com, and follow us on Facebook at Pad Nation, Pad Nation 2 at Twitter. Guys, I got an interesting email, and the emailer asked, what is the role, and I guess because they put with the Me Too movement, and the millennials, what is the role of the athlete they said more specifically our athletes, so I'm assuming they're African-American, black. What is the role of the black athlete in the midst of civil rights and this new and day and age movement? T, what do you think? I mean, what is the role of, you know, African-Americans in sports? LeBron James, we see what he does. Mm-hmm. What do you think the role is?
In regards to the Me Too movement, I guess, is what she's asking? Or her? Or he or she is asking?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To be honest with you, it's, you know, and you know, hear me out when I say this, not much. I could be wrong when I say this, but I this is my opinion, not much. Because, see, again, they may be able to identify with in the sense of the oppression, but I have found the Me Too movement very ironic that this was started actually 10 years ago by a black woman, and it was largely ignored. But when, but what happens so many times in this country is that when the person who is violated becomes a white woman, the narrative changes. Now, again, the reason why I say I think the black athlete's role in this is sort of none, it's the sad thing is a lot of black athletes have been falsely accused of being of being accused of violating women over the years. So I think I need to, you know, on the, like I said, on the surface, I think the black athlete's role in it is little to none in regard to the Me Too movement, because I don't think all of the issues of the Me Too movement have been met, because black women have had to deal with that for a long period of, have had to deal with that to for years in regards to slavery, in regards to the workplace, in regards to being a professional woman. But as is what always happens in this society, when white women feel oppressed, then all of a sudden we make action of it. And again, people have to understand, this movement was started with a black woman and was basically sort of pushed to the side. But when you saw white women start to push this issue, all of a sudden it became prominent. So again, I know I probably went a long way of saying it, but I think I would say directly that the black athlete has really not much to do with this movement.
Orlando, what's your thoughts on it? I mean, what could be the responsibility or accountability, some people use different words, of the black athlete specifically as it relates to this new age movement?
Well, I apologize, L.A., by sounding like a Me Too person and agreeing with Tony, but that's what it's kind of like when you have all four of us together doing a show.
Right.
But what I will add is the responsibility, they don't have a responsibility, but accountability, I think they're doing a little bit more, because the generations prior to this group of athletes were so goddamn poor as to what they were doing, the Charles Barkley, the gentleman down there in North Carolina where you are. They did such a horrible job of standing up and fighting. So it's kind of nice that LeBron and Carmelo and some of these guys are doing things. But remember that, at least from the NBA's perspective, they weren't ready for this. They weren't ready for a Stephon Marbury to make sneakers that were affordable, that only cost, what, the max was $25, I think they were, when he had the Marbury sneakers.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't ready for that. Even before Marbury, there was a King who launched his Atomic sneakers that were $25. And even Shaq tried to bring the Shaq brand out, and he couldn't sell his sneakers that were affordable for kids. So while LeBron is doing yeomans, as far as education and sending brothers to school and everything else, his sneakers are still, what, $230, something like that? And that's probably cheap, what I'm saying. So, and then the NFL, let's not forget Cap. I mean, Cap didn't molest a woman and get called up on rape charges. And just because he wasn't convicted because the Columbus Police Department wouldn't dare prosecute an Ohio State player. And the owner of that team, no offense, Reg, but the fact that he went out there and tried to defend this man and what could be potential a sexual harassment case, the owner fought hard for this. But Colin Kaepernick is told to sit your ass down and don't come back again. And then they compare him to Ray Rice. He didn't punch his girlfriend. You know, they compare him to Greg Hardy. He didn't beat nobody ass. I've seen Kaepernick's picture with Ray Caruth. Like, the brother didn't do that. He didn't do that. And what made me upset about this even more is, you know, I'm going to piss a lot of people off here. How dare I talk about our Greek letter organizations, but he's a member of an organization that really wasn't supporting him until people started with the little public outcry. So I'll leave it there because, I mean, the emails will probably be flooding in on Twitter account. I'm Orlando at KRSB. That's how you can tweet me, or at KRS Broadcast. Tweet me, not L.A., not Tony, not Reggie. I said it.
Well, I'll send it. We got your back,
Orlando.
That's right. And it's interesting enough, though, that when you look at it about telling the story, that how could these black athletes be at the forefront of any type of movement when they're battling, once again, mainstream media, trying to clown them and trying to degrade them. And, you know, a guy like a Cam Newton, which I have problems with Cam, and he has to learn some things. But, you know, Cam can't do anything right in this state. And all he did is got a team to the Super Bowl, made the playoffs, you know, several times. But he can't do enough. And so, you know, if we are looking at these guys to step up, you know, to take this stance in certain situations, hell, they're worrying about fighting off the vultures behind them. The media who wants to bury, you know, as a starter. You know, and I bring up Cam. You know, I never forget the couple of years ago they went to the Super Bowl, and I was in a restaurant and went up to get something to drink, and the two older white guys had said, "I hope that Denver takes that football and shoves it up Cam's, you know what?" And these were Panther fans, so-called. So. You know, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, people, I'm with Orlando. They don't have to, but if they take a stance and they take the right stance, as LeBron has been doing and some others, I think it goes a long way in terms of their voice and their actions with a lot of young people who will look and say, you know, if they can do it, then I can do it too. You know, I can stand for justice and against police brutality and social injustices and the politics and things and gun control and all of those things are out there. So,
L.A., dare I say it, if Cam can do it, me too.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this.